Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Coming up on this edition of the TV Black Box one-on-one podcast, I talk to actor Dan Ewing about his involvement in this season of SAS Australia, plus a career that includes everything from soap to action movies. Let's do it.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello, gorgeous people, and welcome to another TV Black Box one-on-one podcast. I'm Aaron Ryan. Joining me today is actor Dan Ewing, who has been in television, theatre, and just this year in massive action film Occupation Rainfall, as well as Love and Monsters on Netflix. But what happens when you peel off the acting, the cameras and the lights, and completely expose your true self on SAS Australia? Let's find out. Dan Ewing, thanks for joining me.
Mate, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Well, first question has to be, why? Why subject yourself to a warts and all mental, physical and emotional brutal slaying, for a better term, on SAS?
Well, I thought you were talking about living in Sydney at the moment compared to where you are, free air.
That's the second question.
Look, I'm totally obsessed with growth, and I've actually got some mates who serve. One of my good mates, Damien Tomlinson, he's lost both legs serving in Afghanistan. Oh. And he actually does a bit of acting. He was in Hacksaw Ridge, and I just thought, you know, he can step into my world of wearing makeup, very risky. but to really look through the lens of an SAS operative or someone from our military or services, this is as close as I was going to get to do it, so why not?
Well, one of the brutal parts would have been exposing yourself to tear gas. I mean, something that I've also been exposed to as well in the same sort of setting as you were. Tell me about that experience.
Well, I think I said in a previous interview, I think they wanted a long-winded question, but I just said they had me at tear gas. it's the great leveler, so it doesn't matter whether you're the smallest recruit and say Bonnie Anderson, or the biggest in say Sam or Mark Philip Poussis, it's the great leveler. And it's quite fascinating to see how some people's bodies cope with it as opposed to others. You know, you wouldn't think that some of the biggest and strongest people really suffered with it, but it was, I can't imagine what, just you start having thoughts after about people going through that and not in a, let's call it a very safe scenario, because it was a safe scenario. Albeit dangerous and, you know, a little scary. We'll call it scary. But to go through that, I cannot imagine what it would be like in real life.
In the promos, and in I think it's the first episode, you spoke to camera in one of the scenes saying, what would Dan Ewing do if his back was against the wall? Well, you've been on SAS now, so what would Dan Ewing do if his back was against the wall?
Well, we can't give too much away, but I'm very proud of what I did with my back against the wall. Look, I like to set an intention. Some people call it a goal. That goal was to pass the course. So I obviously can't let you guys know if I did or I didn't, but I was very content in what I achieved on the show. I'll say that, and that doesn't mean I passed. Doesn't mean, you know, I didn't pass, but it's for me, it was just about giving it my absolute best. And I felt when I left there, I was very, very content. And yeah, I don't feel I'm one of the people who thought, oh, maybe I should have waited a bit longer to have a cup of tea and a Tim Tam.
You know? Like, people in the industry say that you're friendly, personable, charming, just a really nice guy. I mean, how does that compare to having to be really serious on SAS?
That's actually great. It's funny you say that. I actually struggled sometimes with some of the serious moments. I try to keep a sort of a neutral head because I've spoken to some of my mates in the military, and it's because their job, the DS's job is to rattle you and take you out of your comfort zone. So I try to stay as neutral as possible, not too high or too low. But some of the physical things, especially when they started pitting recruits against each other, I struggle with that because I'm a big team player. Like I was just like, hey, and you want me to do what to my buddy here? You know, I struggled with that. And having that fire where some of the athletes, they could switch it on and off. So that was a fascinating sort of awareness or experience for me. But it was quite confronting, shall we say, with some of the tasks we had to do against each other. And all of a sudden, oh, cool, we're sitting next to each other in the dunning.
A couple of scenes where you had to strip down in the show. There's obvious reasons why they do that. It's to strip away the ego more than the clothes themselves. Mm. You've had to have your shirt off before in other roles, but can I only imagine that those scenes are very different to what you do in SAS? Was it any less or more comfortable than in acting roles?
Interestingly, yeah. I mean, it's funny. I haven't thought about this before. Great question. Obviously, with acting stuff, it's they mollycoddle you. You know it's coming. Like, how are you feeling? Might be a closed set, depending on how much you're showing. You know, closed set for everybody at home. It's like a skeleton crew kind of thing. But to be out there with 18 people, some of them you've met, but most of them you haven't, and just strip naked, yelled at. It's not like being on a film set. You know what I mean? There's no, like, wardrobe assistant running in with a towel as soon as they yell cut or what have you, and just to be to be that open and exposed in just the setting that we were in Glen Davis where we shot, it was quite daunting actually. You would think that he had his shirt off for 3 years on Home and Away, there's no problem, but it was quite confronting.
You seem to come across with a series as being the team encourager, like, you know, you're doing really well. You know, you just said before that you're a sort of a team player, those kind of comments and, you know, encouraging and motivating people. Did you realize that you were taking on sort of a leadership role in that capacity?
Well, I knew what I didn't like and what I did like about leaders. I'm a huge sports nut. So first and foremost, to be in that environment with Olympians, I knew that I probably wouldn't be quote unquote leading, especially the physical challenge. You know, it's like the guy wears makeup for a living. You know, I always make that joke. But I know what I'm good at in my position that I play in basketball, and that's playing point guard. And that is basically to get your team involved and to identify people's strengths and maximizing those for team success. So I sort of approached it that way. And you just have to. I mean, there was something I really, really loved about the show was it was you and them. So it's your own mind, which is obviously the biggest part, and the people around you to get you through this experience of pain and torture and blood, sweat and tears and tear gas. But it was, I loved that aspect of it. And just, yeah, so getting around each other, if people were struggling, and obviously the whole point of the show was struggle and getting through adversity. So it was great.
In terms of the mental stuff, a small example part of the show, the DS staff give an instruction that says, when I say go, I want you to pick up your bag, I want you to do this or whatever. Then some participants pick up their bags straight away and, you know, and goes off his absolute brain because the instruction was, when I say go.
Yeah.
From a viewer point, it does seem simple. He did say, wait until I say go. However, in the moment, I can imagine, is it hard to focus, or is there so many things running through your mind that people just can't hear an instruction?
Because you're in a state of, not to go too far down the rabbit hole of neuroscience, but you're in a state of hyper stress. So the part of the brain, the amygdala, that is in charge of fight or flight, you're flooded with stress hormones. So what that does is it's you're ready to run, fight or hide. Right? So you're ready to run away from the T-Rex or the saber-toothed tiger. So everything's on high alert. You know, like stressful people, they're quite jittery and all that sort of stuff. I'm doing weird hand motions for everybody listening. Jittery. You know, a jittery, anxious person in your life. So you're constantly in that state. So when you're back in your armchair, and we've all done it, like watching athletes or watching TV shows, oh, I would have done that. But when you're flooded with those stress hormones, it's like all you might hear little bits of information. And like I said, it's run, fight or hide. So you're ready to run. You're ready to go. You don't want to be last. And they've just told you a second before, do not be last on this task. And they're whipping you if you're last and all that sort of stuff. So it's certainly it was a great experience, because you always think that, don't you, when you're watching sports shows or whatever. You think, I would have done that. No, you wouldn't have. I guarantee you wouldn't have.
Definitely not. For me in this show, having seen a number of episodes, you have the look, the same one I recognised in Nick Cummings, a.k.a. the Honey Badger, when he did the show. Just a look of sheer focus and determination. Now, that is usually a winning trait. I don't know anything. I don't know if you win or how far you go, but how are you channeling the mental grind of a show like this?
So I said it before, I set an intention and that was to pass the course. And I know for myself mentally, you call it a goal, you call it intention or whatever, the mindset's a blueprint. So I can tell the people on the show who didn't set a blueprint, they said, I'd be happy if I got to day whatever. And they got to day whatever and their mind said, you're done. And then they VW, right? I knew I couldn't do that just for me. I'm not knocking anyone, by the way. I just know it works for me in my life. I need to set a clear intention or a goal and then take steps towards that. That's just me. You know, some people are like, you Muppet. Why do you need to do that? It's like, because I'm a Muppet. because I'm an actor. No, it's I just find that sort of stuff really worked. And I could tell the tasks that I smashed when I had that focus and I had that drive and I really honed in on that and just concentrated. I can tell the things where I was too placid. And that was a great learning experience for me. You know, I think I'm going to come out of the show looking like the I was going to say meditating, but it's almost levitating. I'm the actor wearing Birkenstocks and walking across water or something. But I could tell when I was too placid, and you need to be able to unlock that competitive edge, that controlled aggression, like the DS talk about. There were certainly times where I was too relaxed and I was kind of flopping around, and that doesn't work on the SAS course.
Yeah. I'm not sure this one how spoilery this question is, but there's always something that the DS expose in each person. It might be fear, it might be doubt, it might be childhood trauma, it might be anger. Are you able to mention, I guess, what was exposed in you or a weakness that they thought? What did the DS find challenging?
No, I think with me, they were just like unleash that, like that inner. I think with actors, a lot of the time, I'm super, super genuine and super open. And anyone who looks at my social medias, I talk about everything, past experiences, absolutely anything. But sometimes I one of the interesting little tidbits I learn about myself is just kind of what I touched on before. It's all good to like have a journal and meditate and be calm and be chilled and be a team guy and positive. But if you're on an SAS course and you need to have that sort of controlled aggression, like at a boxing thing or, you know, or because controlled aggression also just narrows your focus and you attack a task. Sometimes I was way, way, way too placid. So a lot of the time they were trying to help me sort of, it's okay to do that. You don't always have to be sort of a team guy and, you know, and super, super chilled. So yeah, that was a interesting part. And boy, do they try to whip it out of you. My gosh. I can't wait for everyone to see. It's just such a great, great fun show. And just seeing people who you know, who you've seen before in other other arenas, just getting absolutely smashed. I can't wait for everyone to see it.
Well, talking about some of the other people, is there anyone you clicked with during the show that perhaps you've kept that rapport going since leaving the show? Is there any special bonds in there?
Yeah, well, we've got a great chat, a very funny group chat. So at the moment, this is insight into the recruits. We're sharing around funny inboxes we get from people. There's some very, very creative Aussies out there. So on that note, I would just advise anyone who watches the show, just be kind in the comments. Don't send rude DMs because you're going to end up in the group chat. No, I think, do you know what? The honest answer is it's not a drama show that's very produced and scripted, or a reality show that's let's call it a dating reality show that's scripted. There was actually no one argued. People had these great different points of view and opinions, but we were very, very lucky with the people we had. Very lucky. And everybody was conveyed their opinions, but there's none of that cliche telly drama. You know, the only drama was from the voiceover guy who scares the crap out of me. I work in the industry and I'm like, man, that voiceover guy really sells this.
I'm not going to mention it, but there were a few things after episode 3 people might want to tune in. There was a a few things going on with a few of the celebs, but there definitely were a number of different personalities though in this season. It'd be interesting to having all you guys on Big Brother together. That would be interesting. How did it go living with so many different kinds of people?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, my line of work is people, is transforming into different characters. So I was just a junkie for it, you know, for want of a better term. I loved it. And for me, because being a sports nut, I mean, it's always great to hang out. Like, Manu and I, we did the same series of Dancing with the Stars. I'm still so angry that he took that Mirrorball trophy. It just affects me every day. And I know I met Bryn before, but yeah, across the board, just being, for me, being, again, for want of a better term, on top of Olympians for a couple of weeks. I mean, just think about that. For being a sports nut, to be there with Olympians, and it's not like you're hanging out with them at an event or seeing or having a chat at something. It's, you're literally living with them. So to see what Olympians do, mate, like their mental mindset and process, that for me was just unbelievable. And everyone... just seeing Yana and talking to Yana Pittman, who's like a mother of four, and then she's a doctor as well, and she was an Olympian. I'm just there going, oh yeah, I wore fake tattoos for 3 years and now I do movies, you know. That, can you imagine, like me, I was just having a ball.
Hey, just a question about the challenge. When you pass a challenge or a challenging obstacle on the show, is it just relief? Because I ask that because for some, you can see that the achievement was more than just the obstacle. It was almost like they'd broke free from something that was inside of them, like for their whole life. How was it for you? Is passing something just, okay, yep, I passed it, that's great, move on to the next one? Or is there more to just passing one of those, you know, the big, big obstacles?
Well, it depends if it's a true fear or phobia. So I say it on the show. I mean, it always looks good in the trailer. I have no fears. What a wanker that guy is. Sorry if anyone's offended by that language. But I don't have any phobia. Right? Everyone's afraid. Like if I have a gun pointed to my head, of course I'm going to be scared. If I'm looking over a cliff, of course I'm going to be scared. If I'm about to be dunked in the water in a car, you know, and have to escape, I'm going to be scared. But I have no phobias. To watch the people triumph over their phobias, I'm talking about claustrophobia, you know, the fears of heights, fear of tear gas. I think we all have a fear of tear gas now. But to see them triumph, for me, that's the most special stuff, because you see how paralyzing it is. Bonnie Anderson, she deals with a particular one. I think it's going to be episode 3. It's all a blur for us in there. We don't know how to episode 3. She has a real fear of drowning, an absolute real fear. And just to overcome some of the stuff she did on that show, I was so proud of it. Everyone did. Everyone had a, you know, I think we've all got a fear of mice. That's a little tidbit. a little tidbit. There's been some clues about the mice that's been leaked on the Recruit social media. There was a media package we got sent from the network with a puzzle and a little toy mouse. That'll all make sense very soon to everybody.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've got the puzzle too. Now, maybe it'll make sense when that comes up too.
There's a few critters.
one of the celebrity, it was a female, said, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it, was panicking and so on, but then eventually they did it. And the DS staff simply said, you said you couldn't do it, you panicked, and it got into your head, just get your head together. Is it that simple? Just get your head together.
Well, it is. So you can do anything theoretically, right? With a click, right? With a decision. And most things in life can be solved with a decision. But our subconscious programming, again, this is the neuroscience rabbit hole that I've gone down. We're 93% habitual, right? So, and that habitual behavior, our subconscious programming, is designed to keep us safe. Again, the saber-toothed tiger, the T-Rex. So it can be anything. Like there's no saber-toothed tiger anymore. It could be anxiety or a business meeting or seeing your ex at something or whatever it is. We all have those fears, and our brain is designed to keep us safe from those things. But what the DS tried to do is it's a fear barrier, and you've got to crash through that. On the other side of that is heaven. It's absolutely heaven. And believe me, from seeing from seeing people go through this, and obviously myself, I had the bejesus scared out of me. but seeing people who got over, who really triumphed over one of their phobias, you can actually feel the energy radiating off them. You can feel it. You know, it's not quite the purple aura around it. Maybe some people could see that. I can't, but it's just the elation and relief, and their physicality is different. You start, they're very hunched over and gee, I can't. And by the end of it, they're walking chin up and, you know, all that stuff. I've mentioned Bonnie Anderson before, had this little swagger about her kind of thing. It's such a beautiful, beautiful show about triumph over adversity. It's fantastic.
It definitely does come through on screen. You do actually feel it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you're physically fit by, I guess, looking at you, but I suppose how physically fit are you is not really known until you get a beasting on SAS Australia. So, Dan, how physically fit are you?
I thought I was reasonably fit. I mean, I've gotten in shape physically for roles, but I think people now know the show is not about being physically fit. It doesn't matter whether you're Dan Ewing, Bryn Elson, Manu, or big Sammy. It's like the physical stuff, don't get me wrong, it does help. It does help. And it means they probably yell at you a little bit less. But it's the mental game, man. The mental game. Like, you've got to be, you know, I think I talked about it a lot in the show. It's like there's, you know, I'm not waking up and doing my journal with my little boy, my gratitude journal, my little boy, and meditating. You got to find other ways. In the military, they call it box breathing. Or, you know, a lot of people call it sort of visualizing what you're going to do just to sort of quieten your mind. But that's very hard when you're like, the whole point of this course is to put you in a state of stress. So, you know, it's finding a moment to take a few deep breaths and just, you know, get out of that sort of stress environment and everyone else's stress. You know, you got 18 other people who are sort of radiating that vibe as well. So it was a fascinating challenge, but it's all mental. Physical, yeah, but it's all mental.
Well, the mental part, there is some meditation from you in the series, and you talk about that in the series. How does meditation work for you in your daily life? Are you spiritual or religious perhaps, or what?
Yeah. So this is actually good. I love this question. Because meditation to me was kind of taboo, you know, like, not, I didn't knock it. I understood it. I think it's great. But I thought it was, you know, the hippies at Byron Bay under the tree, you know. I did. And even mental health, it wasn't taboo. I just didn't understand what it meant. So I'll explain to her, this is the way that kind of, you know, my mum's a scientist, right? So from a neurological perspective, right? When you wake up in the morning, your stress hormones are the highest, your cortisol levels are the highest. So by meditating, by visualizing, just by doing, you know, just say four deep breaths, right? In, hold, and then out, four deep breaths, just cortisol levels drop. And then your brain will release sort of dopamine and serotonin and all those lovely things that are great. And it just starts the day off, right? So I started by calling it, you'll love this, like my seven-year-old would, I started by calling it my quiet time, because I didn't want to say meditation, because I was like, I don't meditate. I'm a bloke, kind of meditate. Quiet. And then I started really, like, LeBron James, the best basketball player in the world, meditates and visualizes. And you start reading it, and like, there's a lot of successful people out there who do this stuff.
Yeah.
But if anyone out there is thinking about it, just Google guided meditation. It doesn't have to be an hour of your life. I started off by doing 10-minute ones, and it's weird, it's uncomfortable, but it absolutely changes your life. It's just a few minutes of your day. First thing in the morning is what I would recommend. And then look, and who knows, once you get good at it, maybe you can do it on the SAS course and have Foxy saying, are you effing meditating in your face? Which is... It's on the trailer. Got me good, I've got to say. Got me good.
I was going to mention something. There's a time and place for meditation.
Yeah. They all meditate. This is the thing, right? The DS all meditate, especially Ollie. But it's like, it's kind of time and place, because what I was doing, we're about to do a task, and there's a lot of waiting around, right? It's TV, 18 people doing the one task, and if there's a helicopter involved, there's a lot of resetting, right? You're spending the day there with 18 people trying to get this task done. So I was just, I know everyone's nervous. So I just tried to close my eyes and visualize what I was going to do. So, you know, like I said, LeBron James does it before a basketball game or whatever for his assignment during that game. So that's what I was doing. But it does look kind of funny, right? Imagine that in a war zone. Like, who's this Muppet meditating while the enemy are coming over the hill? So yes, time and place.
All right, let's go in a whole different direction. We've spoken about SAS. There's a few other things going on in your life too. You were in Occupation, the film in 2018. Was it just me, or did they really turn up the budget and technology for the second one? I mean, it was only a couple of years later, or 3 years later, for Occupation Rainfall.
Well, it's amazing. When you have a successful movie, the studio tends to want to give you more money for the sequel. Yeah, look, it was great. It was such a, because sci-fi still, it's successful here, but it's still like a small niche market. Over in the US, it was shot to the top, to Occupation, the first movie, shot to the top of the Netflix charts and sort of stayed there for a few weeks. So then Lionsgate got on board and said, right, go and make a sequel for $25 million. The first was about $7 million. So then we were able to bring in sort of Ken Jeong and Jason Isaacs and Daniel Gillies and Tamora Morrison, who's now sort of, he's reigniting the Star Wars, his Star Wars character in Boba Fett. So, and then we've done that. And then that's been the top of the charts for, so that was top of the Apple TV charts over in the US for, I think it was about a month. And it's done extremely well overseas. So it's a very, very exciting time for that little franchise.
I know that, you know, there's the filming part of it is not as fun, I suppose, as a viewer watching it. But, I mean, is it as fun to film as it looks? I mean, you're going around shooting, like, baddies and aliens. Mm. Is it as fun as it looks?
It's more fun than SAS Australia. it's great. And I, you know, it's, I just love it. I love, like, again, I love the team environment. I love leading movies. To be the lead of that film with a cast, like you look, I look at the IMDb of it, it's like number one, Dan Ewing. And then it's like, you know, and then sort of down from that, it's like, gee whiz, I'm team captain of this monster of a film with this cast. It really, it's pressure, but it's also a great honor to do that sort of thing. But it's so fun. I mean, come on, you know, it's like you're doing these stunt sequences and there's explosions and like just, and to have the big toys. I mean, anyone who knows film and TV, to get the big exciting toys and camera cranes and to have, we had a hovercraft, for goodness sake, you know, it was amazing.
And do you see yourself as the leading man now? Have you stepped out of the shadows? You are the leading man? You accept that?
Oh, well, I've led most of the films I've done, but I think now it's more of an international stage. So, yeah, there is certainly global, a much more sort of global awareness of me. And we're quite patient with that. So after Home and Away, what some actors choose to do is they'll jump on, you know, like one of the sort of CWE network shows. And they're great, you know, like a Flash or an Arrow or something like that. And whatever. I just knew I love feature film so much. There's something about film for me with the narrative, the beginning, middle and end. And the, you know, that objective, the TV formula, I wanted to break out of a bit. I just felt like I loved it, but I wanted to hold off on that. So to be cast as the lead antagonist, spoiler alert, the lead antagonist in Love and Monsters, a film that size, as my, I would say, sort of coming out party, for want of a better term, in the US market, it was huge, and it took patience. I had to knock back a few things that would have been really nice for the bank balance and would have been great fun and whatever, but to have that patience, many sleepless nights talking to agents back and forth, just be patient, you know. But I set an intention a few years ago of not settling, and not that things are settling, but I made a choice for me of what I wanted to do and accomplish in my career. So, you know, to be rewarded with Love and Monsters being the number one movie in the world for April and May on the biggest platform in the world.
Wow.
In a pandemic, you know, I was just, it was stunned. You know, every now and then I'll do an interview or have a request about, you know, talking about Michael Rooker and Dylan O'Brien being in that film with me. I was like, oh yeah, I was in a film with those blokes. That was great.
I was going to ask you about, you know, about how big the film is, but you mentioned that. But with Love and Monsters, which is, as I said, on Netflix, great film. I watched it last night, and I would say that it was a cross between maybe Lord of the Rings and Men in Black. I mean, how would you describe the film?
Oh, it's a real homage, I think, to the 90s sort of action adventure films. It's like I think with a film, when it's, the title's Love and Monsters, yeah, like, here we go. But it's, I think the guys at 21 Laps, so they do Stranger Things. So if that, for everybody at home who's seen Stranger Things, they're masters of tone, and they don't just do insert, you know, teen action adventure here. They really add a lot of interesting layers. I'm sure you'll agree, it wasn't your cliche in the middle there. It's a really, really great narrative. Sure, plenty of action adventure, but there's a lot of heart in it, and some great humor, and one really great haircut. I'm sure you'll attest to that. Well, that, woo,
yeah, the nice wavy long sort of,
oh,
yeah, hecker.
And yeah, this is a great film and TV story. That was actually meant to be much longer, but I thought they thought my character looked too much like a Viking. So it ended up being that what can only be described as Andrew G when he was Andrew G before he changed his name back to Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Do you think that? Is that a good comp?
Yeah. Go with that, yeah. Well,
get out of Andrew Ginsburg, by the way. Osher.
People being attacked by King Kong-sized crabs or frogs in the movie, it's kind of bizarre, but it's a lot of fun. But also, it's another side of you. It's a more darker, as in serious, but also dark comedy, sort of. Because it's a sort of a big, it's a weird kind of way to put it, but are you enjoying the versatility of your roles now? So it's comedy, action, there's soap in there, there's everything.
I love it. I think as actors, you want obviously a established ongoing career of excellence and success. I'm not overly biblical person, I'm spiritual, but I love, there's a passage as I can do all things. And I think as actors, you know, don't get me wrong, people can make a lot of money doing the sort of one genre. But for me, I just love the transformation aspect, because that's what I do, things that scare the crap out of me. I love that. I love going, well, I can't just look at my Ivana Chubbuck book technique thing here and set this clear objective here. And this, I love going, how am I going to accomplish this? This character is so conflicted. And why are they doing this? And yeah, I don't like a formula. Formulas are just like, I don't like it being too easy. As a viewer, I don't like knowing what's going to happen and formulas and all sorts of stuff. So I love stuff that challenges me. So yeah, that's for sure.
So if you had to sort of pick a movie, what kind of movies would you like to be in the future? What kind of roles? What's that, maybe an example of something that's already been out?
I've got a few things I want to tick off. I'm such a huge fan of Gladiator. I would love to do a swords and sandals thing, but not just, it can't, I'm so action must be secondary to good character. I'm a Nazi for that. And I've got a bucket list. I've always wanted to do a Jurassic Park thing, just because of the franchise is so, like, I still listen to the soundtrack because it gives me that sort of inner child, the love of movies. Anytime I start drifting into, like, it's a job mode, I start listening to soundtracks from when I was a kid. But I love to do just a real, if I'm about to start I've got a project coming it's just where I'm playing two different characters, shall we say. And that for me, I've seen Tom Hardy is a master at that. So just for me, that sort of challenge of how do you do that? How do you step? Cause it's not just, you can commit to one character and see you later. You know, shooting schedules are very different. They can try to help you out, but that is going to be a very big challenge. I'm looking forward to that.
Maybe a suggestion for a challenging role. You're talking about a Vikings type thing. I mean, Jason Momoa is in an Apple series called Sea, and it's kind of like the Viking series, but they're all blind, so they're all fighting, sort of, and not knowing where they're going. That'd be an interesting show to film, I would imagine.
I love. I'm so glad you mentioned that. That's one of my favorites, because it's like, it's kind of taking the Game of Thrones vibe and taking it to a whole new level. So I love things that are different. Yeah, so for example, like, and when I say like formula, like I love what that, very good for audience members, but you know, like your meat and potato shows where you know there's going to be, you know, it's like it'll be a cop show. It's like CSI this or whatever. Great shows. I used to watch them. But for me, I go, oh, I know they're going to get the guy at the end, or they might take two episodes to do it. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I just love not knowing what's going to happen. You know, like Breaking Bad for me, that sort of thing, or True Detective. I love kind of feeling challenged and unease and really invested in what happens. And that's hard as an actor, because you work in the business, you know, there's cameras and makeup and producers and directors there. So for me, when I'm really sort of, they can really invest and engage me, that's the shows I love.
I know when you do interviews, you get asked lots of questions about Home and Away. So I'm only going to have just the one question, only the one. Many celebrities look back on their soap roles in different ways, some with fondness, and they always connect with that, right through to the people that just, I want to forget it, never mention it. Where do you fall on the spectrum?
I can't stand people like that, man. I loved Home and Away. I love the people on there. I love the show. I think people forget that it is Australia's favorite drama, and it runs Channel 7. That might be a taboo thing to say, but that show runs their whole network, you know? And I just think it is such a fantastic show with amazing people, and just what they can do in the time they get it in. I love, I went back and did a cameo, which is like, oh, you went back, like, and people were acting like it was a big deal. I'm like, I love that show. It was, they're so fantastic. And I was picking up conversations I'd had 4 years ago, you know? What they do, I don't think that show gets enough credit and the people get enough credit, but everyone's got entitled to an opinion, but I don't connect with people who look back on their time or frown on their time. I love it. I look back and I love it. I still stay in touch with crew members just as much as I do with cast, and what the showrunner Lucia Dario does there and Louise Bowes, their script producer. It's amazing. I mean, imagine churning out that much storyline every single episode and having to shoot it in a beautiful way that looks appealing, that's not just, you know, it looks like a cheap studio show, you know? Mm-hmm. So I tip my hat to them.
Second last question. How are you going with the acting industry in terms of COVID? There's lots of pressure on crews, lots of people out of work. I mean, how's the industry and your friends and you going, getting through it all?
Well, first and foremost, big g'day to everybody out there who might be suffering. Yeah. There's a lot of people doing a lot worse off than me. I stay positive. I was very lucky. I've got quite a few projects in the can. And look, for me, it's more about things might be shifted. Yeah. And I'm lucky that I've been doing this professionally for a while and I haven't had to do a quote unquote day job. I've got mates who are living in LA that were sort of, you know, gigging actors. They might do an episode here or a gig or a movie there or whatever, but they still have, say, a day job. And then that day job gone, you know, in the blink of an eye because they work in hospitality or at a gym or whatever. So I really feel for those people, you know, and obviously there was a lot of civil unrest over in the States and what have you. But look, for me, it's the border thing at the moment. The biggest thing is my little boy's in Queensland and I'm in Sydney. So, you know, I can focus on that being a negative or, you know, and look, don't get me wrong, I'd always much rather be there with him, but we get together every morning at 7:30. We do a little gratitude journal. He writes down three things he's grateful for. And I do the same. So that's our little moment of connection. So if anyone out there is suffering with that sort of stuff and are separated by families, just set a time every day where you can do something along those lines. You don't have to do a gratitude journal. Although it's fantastic for kids. I can't recommend it enough. But don't focus on the suffering. Don't focus on being apart. Focus on what you do have. You know, I had Father's Day and Archie's birthday on the same day on Sunday. You know, so I could focus on, oh, it's Archie's birthday and it's Father's Day. Down the nuts. Or I could go, hey, look, it's my son's birthday and it's Father's Day. I'm the luckiest man in the world. I love my little boy and he's in Queensland, having a great time in Queensland. Well, I'm in Sydney, locked up. That's not how you see it.
I'm stuck on that, the little journal. That's beautiful.
Well, it changed my life. It changed my life, mate. So what I always think it's funny when actors or people like that or people in the public go, I want to change the world. This, you know, start with your own backyard. Start with yourself, right? So I changed my life just doing that. And then I was like, I'll just do it with my little boy, a little moment of connection every day. And I've shared it and people have come back and it doesn't matter how big and strong and ugly you are, or if you're a little cute princess on her way to school, being grateful and appreciative for what we have is really important, especially in times like this. I mean, we live in the best country in the world. Now, we've got clean water, free healthcare. Obviously, what we're going through at the moment sucks, but you know what? My little boy and his mum aren't in Queensland trying to jump on a Qantas jet to escape the country, are they? You know, so I think we need to remember we're pretty lucky here, you know?
Oh, that would have been a beautiful note to end on, but I did also just want to ask what's coming up for you next. So if, you know, people know where to see you next.
On SAS Australia season 2, crying. look, IMDb is a little sneaky giveaway of what I'll be doing next. I'm not supposed to say anything, just verbally, but IMDb does. And then there's another American thing that, again, I can't talk about. Because you know what, mate? I'll tell you one thing. Studio lawyers scare me. You know, there's one thing I've learned in my time. They're very expensive for a reason. No, I'm very, very lucky, very happy for the next stage. And just very grateful for all the opportunities that all the films I've done have sort of opened a lot of doors and have led down this path. But yeah, like I said, I always look back on my time on Home and Away and especially now this new sort of this experience with SAS, it's really set me up for what's to come. So I'm very grateful for all that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I'm intrigued to see your journey. I'm on SAS and can't wait whatever projects are coming up next. You know, you've hinted at a few, but looking forward to that. Thank you so much.
Mate, thank you so much for your time. And just for everyone playing at home, you have the best gaming chair and setup I've ever seen. I'm not a gamer, but I'm going to snitch on you. There's headphones that look like you could be like taking off in some sort of NASA rocket, and that chair looks like it's come out of a like F1, so Formula One car. Okay, so that's everyone at home. He's not in his palace. He's in his hub, ready to take anybody on.
Thank you for that. That's Dan Ewing, who's part of SAS Australia, which airs Monday to Wednesday on 7 at 7:30 p.m. If you're in lockdown, or even if you're not, Occupation Rainfall is a great movie and well worth a look. And also Love and Monsters on Netflix. Lots of fun. Kind of end of days, Men in Black style. I mean, have a look and see for yourself. That's it for another TV Black Box 101 podcast. You can catch all the latest television news and exclusives on tvblackbox.com.au.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you for your company. Until next time, look after yourselves and bye for now.